Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as one guest joins me on today's program, but he's kind of a jack of all trades. That is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're chat NHL, we're going to talk golf, we're going to talk NASCAR, we may talk some horse racing along the way as well, so plenty of stuff for us to go over here on this Tuesday edition of the show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. I got some NASCAR content up over there for you this morning. My preview of the two duels, the Blue-Green Vacations duels on Thursday night. Then also my preview of Sunday's Daytona 500. Still working through my Major League Baseball stuff. We'll be posting that in about a week or so over at the website. Daily NHL, daily college basketball, daily NBA from our very talented cast of writers. We'll have a golf preview from James Mazzola for the Genesis Invitational. We also have NBA power ratings from Noops, a tennis preview from Big Ten Watto. A lot of stuff going on over there at the website. Make sure you keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. Check all of that out. And like I mentioned on yesterday's show, we've got that free sports book over at bangthebook.com, that ad-supported sports book where you can go over there, watch an ad, get 10 cents in your account, start betting with that, start trying out sports betting. If maybe you are new to it, if you're in a state that may be getting it sometime soon, you can try it out essentially risk-free, see how things work out for you over there at the website. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is Mr. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, bud. Another day at the beach. How you doing?
Another day at the beach. I got a chance to get a look at Brian here this morning as we're recording on Skype, and he's bundled up like he's in Antarctica. So I don't know about this whole beach thing, but hey, man, my condolences. I hope it warms up for you soon out there.
I get up first thing in the morning. I don't want to wake the world up. And so I go outside, got a nice setup in the backyard on the patio and everything, but it's currently 47 in Las Vegas, but 47 in Las Vegas feels like 20.
Especially in the shade, you know,
and I'm in the shade. Yeah.
You got to take advantage of the sunshine. I see the sun like once every 2 weeks at this time of the year. You got to go work on your tan out there, man.
Buddy, that was like the thing that pushed it over the top to ultimately say it was going to move here. And you'll attest to this at the end, after whatever it was, 30-ish years in Buffalo, which I adored. But March, April, and May, you know, I made it through winter. And I liked winter. But March, April, and May, when it was 55 and overcast and you never saw the sun, it gets cold here. I whine about when it gets cold here for 3-4 months, but you see the sun here like 360 days a year.
That sounds good to me. All right, let's talk some NHL here to start off this segment. I know that you didn't really pay too much attention to the XFL. We will talk about that on Wednesday during our segment with Wes Reynolds, but we'll start in the NHL here today with Brian. And, you know, we talked about it last week. We talked about some teams that you may want to kind of keep an eye on from a future standpoint. All of a sudden, our Colorado Avalanche, 4 in a row, they're up to second place there in the Central Division.
That's right, and I think this is a dangerous team. I think the Islanders are another team in the East we had talked about, and I think Trotz is slowly going to get them going, and they had a nice win topping the Caps last night. But specific to Colorado, I will tell you, buddy, you know me, and I've long talked about the dad's trip as the greatest betting angle in sports. And the Blues, by the way, are on a dad's trip tonight in Anaheim, Thursday here in Vegas. Again, it's been another great year with the dad's trip. But, pal, I'm telling you, we're finding one that is running dead equal with the dad's trip, and that's teams coming home from, if you want to call it a four-game minimum, a four-game or more road trip, and coming home and playing the first game. These teams just can't win games. And last week, it was a gold mine. Carolina came back from a 2-goal deficit, beat Vegas on Saturday night. Vancouver had a cross-country trip, came home, Calgary beat them. It's been winning time and time and time again, and if it comes to fruition tonight, I will give it the full credit it deserves as being right there with the dad strip, because, and I'm playing them too, just on the premise that this thing is just sick. Ottawa is plus 275 tonight at Colorado. I'm taking a shot with Ottawa tonight, plus 275. Colorado played at Philly, at Buffalo, at Ottawa, and won that game in Ottawa 4-1, at Columbus and at Minnesota. And now Colorado's coming home playing their first game. I'm not going bananas. It's going to be a little small stick your toe in the water thing. But I kick myself. That angle has just been an ATM machine.
Yeah, there are a few games tonight that I think are really, really interesting. Go ahead.
Oh, by the way, I forgive me. Talk about two for the price of one. I'm going to play St. Louis on the puck line tonight because I think they're like a 45, 50-cent favorite in Anaheim. The puck line, they're plus $1.75. This is a combo card. Now, I mean, you talk about the stars aligning. It is St. Louis on their dad's trip off a couple of losses. St. Louis on their dad's trip at Anaheim, and Anaheim is playing their first game back from a long East Coast road screen. So you've got the two biggest angles going in the one game tonight, and I'm gonna take a flyer on the puck line and play the Blues on the road minus a goal and a half.
Yeah, I definitely like that one. And there's another game that's very interesting to me tonight, a couple of them actually, but the one that stands out the most here tonight, Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh. I think this is a fascinating game tonight because Tampa, as we know, they played Columbus last night, got steamed up about 15, 20 cents out there in the market. They were looking for playoff revenge because they got swept by Columbus in last year's postseason. That was a very energized game. Columbus lost Seth Jones for the foreseeable future in that game. But, you know, that was a really interesting one because you had a Columbus team against Tampa Bay. No, they just beat them in the playoffs, knew they were going to get Tampa Bay's best shot. Game goes to overtime. Tampa Bay prevails. Now they play Pittsburgh tonight. Bad spot, I think, for the Bolts.
I'll take the other side of the coin, and I'll just say this. That one of the really good ones on Saturday night was Pittsburgh. Like they were like a pick at Florida, and Pittsburgh's just having a great year. And oh, by the way, Pittsburgh just made a big trade and got Jason Zucker. Whether he plays tonight, I don't know. So they pulled the trigger on a big deal, gave up a first round pick and Galchenyuk over to the Wild, and Zucker's going to fit very nicely with Pittsburgh. We know guys go nuts off a trade. So the price, you know, it's baked into the price that Tampa Bay played last night. The one thing I think could offset it is it's a smallish trip, but it's Pittsburgh had a three-game road trip, and it was a gauntlet, man. I mean, they won at Washington. They lost to Tampa 4-2, and then they beat the Panthers. They had an extra day off in between, but it is Pittsburgh's first game home from a smallish trip, a three-game trip against tough competitors. And Tampa Bay starting to find their groove, you know? I mean, you know, the one thing about Tampa Bay, you know, we think about them, Adam, all this skill and all this. They're nasty. I mean, that's a team plays with a real serious edge. It should be a terrific game, but the price, believe me, it's baked into the price that they're playing on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, it definitely is. One thing I do like is that Pittsburgh did lose to Tampa last week, so they kind of have that rapid revenge type of spot. But as you mentioned, Tampa Bay's rattled off 7 in a row, and we're kind of getting to that point in the season where it's time to start looking at those teams that to a degree kind of went through the motions maybe a little bit. I think Carolina is one of those teams too, where Carolina had such a good playoff run last year. They wind up coming up just a little bit short in the Eastern Conference there. And then they get off to a little bit of a hangover start. But I think that's a team that's going to start making a push up the Metropolitan Division. I think they're a very, very good team. They've got one of the better goal differentials, much like a Colorado that we talked about last week. I think Carolina's a team that's going to start to find that groove. Tampa Bay, been there, done that. They start slow. You know, the last 2 years, Tampa Bay really invested a lot in the regular season, in trying to get some of those team accolades, most wins, most points, stuff like that. This year, they didn't have that same killer instinct in the regular season, but now they're finding it. And it's about that time, that 60, you know, 55, 60 game mark where those teams kind of flip that switch and say, okay, it's time to get going.
Right. And the games, I think, now is definitely the time the good teams are going to start to really shore things up in their own end of the rink and start playing a much more diligent brand of defensive hockey too. I mean, I watch for a lot more unders to start cropping up. Real quick to go back, if I could, to the Pittsburgh deal. Back-to-back games, by the way, are completely different for a lot of teams. You know, Boston plays back-to-back nights. Well, who cares? You know, you get Rask one night, you get Halak the next. A back-to-back deal is a lot different if you've got two really good goalies. And, oh, by the way, Tampa Bay beat Columbus last night with McElhinney. So their number one goalie, Vasilevskiy, has been freshened since Saturday, and Vasilevskiy gets the start against the Penguins. So it's a lot different deal when you're going back-to-back nights, and all of a sudden on the second half of a back-to-back night, the backup played in night one, and you're getting the starter in the second night. That's nice.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's an excellent point there. You know, some not all back-to-backs, excuse me, are created equal. That is definitely the case there. I want to ask you about Arizona and Toronto tonight, because I think this one's kind of fun. Arizona in a back-to-back beat Montreal last night. This is one of those Northeast types of swings for them. So keep an eye out for them when they return home. I don't know if it's later this week or early next week, but they'll be coming back off of a long trip. So that'll be a spot that you want to keep an eye on a little bit. Toronto could get back Frederik Andersen tonight. I guess he's eligible to be activated. We'll see if he winds up playing, but you know, they've got another injury on defense here with Cody Ceci being out. That's already a team that's bad in its own zone. So what do you think? You got any kind of play for that one tonight?
If I did anything, I would go to the over. And poor Arizona, you know, having a nice season, young team, heading the right way. They make the trade. They get Taylor Hall. They lose Kemper. And he was playing at an incredibly high level. And talk about a punch to the gut. Kemper was supposed to come off IR and either play last night or tonight. He re-injured the knee in the morning skate yesterday. So Arizona, you know, the goaltending is extremely sketchy. And I would throw this at Toronto's defense is a disaster. We know that. And Arizona's at night, some nights are offensively challenged. But I bet you Phil Kessel goes bonkers tonight. You know, they get Phil Kessel up in Toronto. And I think Andersen, it's great. Yeah, Anderson's coming back, but he could be like the Tin Man in the Wizard of Oz out there, you know, shaking off the rust. I would probably lean to the over if I was forced to play the game. I don't know that that's necessarily one I'm going to play. But and I will tell you, buddy, the other one I love is to hook them up. These first period, I do parlays in the first period, the mostly first period overs. But I had a good feeling about the Islanders last night and had a nice one. I had a couple of games to go over, but played the Islanders plus $1.40 in the first period against the Caps, and I think they were up 3-1 after one. I'm telling you, there's a real opportunity playing the first period overs. Now, specifically when Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday night, when you get these big cards, and some of these are minus $1.40, minus $1.70, and I will never lay more than 15, 20 cents in a hockey game. It's insane. There's so many opportunities to be finding plus prices on a menu. But to hook the first period overs up that are minus $1.40, minus $1.60, some are $1.70, but you hook three or four of those up in a parlay and the return on investment comes back in the 4, 5, 6 to 1 range. It's a whole nother market to take a look at.
So I don't want to get you riled up here too early in the morning, but if you want to fire up a heater while talking about this one, the Buffalo Sabres are a shit show right now. Again, I mean, this is an annual thing. I know, right? This is an annual thing. They lost last week to Detroit in overtime. Now they get Detroit at home once again, and they're laying over $2. I mean, what do you do with this team at this point in time?
This was the number last week, and Detroit beat them. Here's the rub that any given night, Eichel can beat you, right? And on many nights, it's Eichel against the other team. The goaltending's been a real issue for Buffalo. The Johansson kid came up. Let me see if there's anything on who's the projected starter tonight. I mean, this kid, he's fine. He's only played a couple of games. He's learning his way. Carter Hutton's back in Nets tonight, and he's just been a disaster. 8-9-4, 3-2-4 goals against. You know who's been playing really good, though, is Bernier. I mean, you're coming into this game tonight, and you got a decided edge in goal with Bernier. Bernier is playing really well at the moment.
Yeah, and Carter Hutton has not played well this season for Buffalo. So, boy, what a mess that team is. One more NHL game I want to ask you about for tonight, and then I have a couple of just sort of more long-term questions to ask you about. The poor Vegas Golden Knights. You know, they play on the road for what feels like forever. They come back home. Now they go back on the road for a standalone road game to take on Minnesota. They have been steamed up rather significantly here tonight, about a 20 to 25 cent move on Vegas as they go back out on the NHL highway. Not real great, though, to come home, go right back on the road, come right back home again, especially with a fairly long trip out to the Twin Cities. But what do you think about them tonight? What do you think about that line move?
I do like Vegas tonight, and I do think it's a good thing, to be honest with you. Yeah, they were gone forever, and they came home and they played that first game, which we just said. Actually, it was their first game home from an 8-game road trip and the All-Star break, and they blew a 2-goal lead in the third period. Fleury's fighting the puck a little bit here. I think going back on the road, where they had a decent road trip, is a good thing, and then they come home, and I'm telling you, they got St. Louis coming in here with the dad's trip, and the games that they got coming up, they're taking this game seriously. I mean, they've got St. Louis, Washington, the Islanders. They got a gauntlet coming in, even when they get back home. The good news is they're in the Pacific Division, and there's a boatload of talent there. Pete DeBoer is what he's done since he's taken over. They're doing a lot of good things, but they're still doing a lot of bad things. But the main thing they're doing is they're playing a north-south game. And they lived and died with the stretch pass. I think they're too fancy. But he's starting the fourth line on many nights, and it's dump it in and go get it and start winning some battles. So Vegas is really starting to create some good chances. They've got to shore things up in their own end, and they need better goaltending. But the time to start, stop talking about it, all the players and the talent you got on paper, it's just been a roller coaster ride. I actually think it is a very good spot for them. And Minnesota does this every year. I mean, they're desperate, right? Minnesota fight their way. They're playing a little better now. Fighting their way, get close. Whether they can get over the hump and get in the playoffs, I think that's probably a too tall a hill to climb. But honestly, I do think this is a good spot for Vegas. I think they got a stone in their shoe after blowing that 2-goal lead the other night.
Now, I mentioned I do like Carolina a little bit long term here. I think that they're a much better team than they've shown so far. And you know, that being said, I mean, they'd be third in the Atlantic Division in points. They just happen to be in the Metropolitan where everything's kind of bunched up a little bit. But you know, we don't have the NFL anymore. Obviously, college football is long gone. People are out there playing college basketball and whatnot. And one of the things I've talked about from a college basketball standpoint is people that haven't been following kind of like to bet the teams that they know, bet the teams that they feel like they can trust. As we look at the NHL side of things here, there are two names that have been perennial playoff teams that have struggled this season. One is Nashville and one is San Jose. Is there any hope for either one of these teams here the rest of the way long term?
Oh, man. The San Jose thing just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It's shocking to me when you're sending Burns and Carlson out there every night, how this has been just so bad. And they're four games below 500. Let me just punch up the playoffs, the wild card, just to double check. San Jose is, I mean, they're 11 out, which is awful. I mean, you got to climb a bunch of teams. I wouldn't say it's a death knell just yet because there's so much down there, but they've got to be a seller. They've got to be a seller at the deadline. And Nashville is in proximity, but something is just really wrong with Nashville. And they're 4 over .500. They're the ones, they're only 4 points out of the playoffs. And you just expect so much from these guys. But Poile is the kind of guy you know, when he had great teams, he'd make a big deal at the deadline to try to put him over the top. This next couple of weeks, I don't think you can write Nashville off only because I think Poile could do something to really shake this up.
Well, and that's the big question, too. You know, obviously, they already had the firing of Laviolette. So, you know, we'll see if they do make that big shakeup. But again, we're getting to
that. And that didn't work either.
No, it didn't. But we're getting to that point in time here where, you know, these teams are positioning themselves for the trade deadline. So that will be something. Obviously, you had the Zucker trade already. But, you know, once you kind of get a little bit closer to the deadline here, teams will be starting to make some of those transactions. They will give their personnel a shot in the arm, or maybe they'll kind of say, well, we're just going to kind of retool and look ahead to next year. So, you know, we're getting close to that time, and, you know, we'll start to hear a lot more of those rumors, and we'll hear about guys playing on pins and needles and all that here very soon.
Yep. No, it's that time of year. And, you know, it's not just the guys that aren't playing well that are walking around on eggshells, because honestly, some of the deals, it's a guy that's playing good, like a Zucker. Now, his name has been out there for back into the summer. But sometimes it's the guy that's playing good that can get you. When a team becomes a seller, all of a sudden some guy pops on the market that, in a, you know, you had no way you envisioned that this guy was going to be on the market. So I the Zucker deal, the Hall deal, these are pretty big deals. But for the most part, the trade market in the NHL is just bogged down, and we'll see if this is a very active NHL season. And hey, if I could, but before we move on my Twitter at Brian Blessing, we're doing a thing called the Hockey Betting Podcast with my buddy Cam Stewart up in Toronto. He's an introvert. If I can only get him to come out of his shell. You know, the kid's crazy. We have a good time and a lot of good stuff, a lot of good betting angles. And I always put it out on my Twitter at Brian Blessing. It's at betchriscanada.net.
Yeah, definitely make sure you check that out. And, of course, follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Blessing for a lot of good insights all the time. We transition to the golf side of things here. And this is no longer the Genesis Open. This is the Genesis Invitational. Now that it has invitational status, smaller field, 120 players, going to narrow this thing down a little bit. Obviously, all the names you would expect are going to be in it, assuming that they want to play in this one. But it does have a larger purse, too. So we get Rory, Rahm, JT, DJ, Woods, Schauffele, Watson, Cantlay, Koepka, Finau, Matsuyama. This is a phenomenal field for this tournament. Usually has a good field anyway. But now with the higher purse, with the invitational status here at Riviera Country Club, we've got the best of the best. And, of course, what that does is give some better prices to a lot of different guys that are out there. Before we get to the guys that you like specifically, what about Riviera? What are the types of players you generally look to take here?
Well, last year, if you remember, it was L.A., wasn't it? It was a condensed tournament, and they had to play a boatload on the one day, and wasn't the weather grisly cold? And didn't Tiger play? I think he actually was playing well last year in this. And Tiger has not won here. But you're getting Tiger in that 20-1 range. If the body holds up, if the weather's good, you know, that's an overlay price on Tiger. McIlroy, Thomas, Rahm, you mentioned all the regular guys. Dustin Johnson's a past winner. But I would just say to you that in many respects, like, and I know you're going to bring them up, so let's do it right now. To me, I don't want to see anybody win a golf tournament playing a range ball. You know, lose the yellow golf ball. But Bubba Watson's won this a bunch of times, and the defending champ is J.B. Holmes. Now, and they're both long hitters, so long hitters obviously, you know, step up to the plate and fare well here. Plus, Dustin Johnson's a former winner. But current form in recent weeks, both Bubba Watson and both J.B. Holmes are playing well. Right? I mean, they've been on the leaderboard. They've been playing well. Can you draw a discernible difference between Bubba Watson and J.B. Holmes at the moment? Just head-to-head. Like a head-to-head matchup between these guys would probably be 20 cents, 25 cents. But Bubba Watson's 22-1 and J.B. Holmes is 70-1. Well, who do you think you'd play?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And again, that's one of those things where, you know, because Bubba has won this thing three times, you get that depressed price because a lot of people do like to bet, you know, on course history, like to sort of take a look at that element. And, you know, I would think too, and maybe I'm wrong here in saying this, but You know, this purse here actually goes up substantially. There's almost an extra $2 million in this purse with the invitational status. So the field is quite a bit stronger. But also, I would have to think that with that in mind, they probably got to make this course a little bit tougher, don't they? At least however they can.
Well, the funny thing is, at this time of year, you never know when you see Riviera. I mean, there's no leaves on the trees, right? I mean, it's a tree-lined course, but the time of year they play it, it's an odd-looking endeavor. But no, it's a beautiful track. But I, you know, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm telling you, Bud, I'm saddling up with an overlaid price, and you know, I do the horse racing stuff every day, and it's amazing to me. The horse racing handicapping mindset can cross over in so many respects to sports, which may sound nuts, but it's true. And it comes down to kind of the class and the company you keep and things like that. But I'll give you the perfect analogy this week. Great horses will go all the way over and play in Dubai, or race in Dubai, over at the Maidan race course, you know, for the $12 million race. And a lot of horses go over there for the balloon money, and great horses go over there, and when they come back, they ain't great horses. I mean, they come back, they need a couple of races just to get real acclimated to their surrounding. Bryson DeChambeau and a bunch of these guys were playing over in Dubai, but Bryson DeChambeau came back. He played the Waste Management Tournament in Phoenix, and he had nothing in the tank, but he didn't play last week, and a lot of the guys went and played Pebble Beach. I think, you know, DeChambeau's back in North America, put his feet up, get a little bit of rest, and then spends a bunch of days working on his game. You know, Bryson DeChambeau's 50-1. I think Bryson DeChambeau is going to step up and have a really big tournament this week. And then the odds makers, when we talk about adjustments, all right, great. I don't know what they were doing for the longest time. The Sung J.M. kid is just driving me nuts, right? Because I bet him 20 times last year, had a great President's Cup, but they're bringing this kid back without knowing how to win at 25-30-1. You know, all of a sudden now Sungjae Im's back at 55-1. So that's the thing about golf. Golf has a, other than the McIlroy, Thomas, Rahms of the world, guys that are kind of in the hunt. You're actually surprised if they're not contending. Most of these guys have a 3 to 5 week current form cycle. I'm telling you, we saw a guy, Brendan Todd, in the fall series win back-to-back weeks. This guy came out of nowhere, but he was playing great. He wins back-to-back weeks. How do you not come back? Now, a letdown is a possibility, certainly. But Nick Taylor played so good, went gate to wire, stared Mickelson down on Sunday and won. And he's playing with house money. Current form, he's 100-1. I'm coming right back with Nick Taylor. Why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, there's a couple of guys that I like here in this field. I think Mark Leishman's a pretty good price here at 40-1. A guy that can definitely get it out there, sort of fulfills that longer hitter thing. Already has a win here this year, just a few weeks ago. He's got a couple of top fives here over the last 4 years. He's kind of a feast or famine guy. Fourth last year, missed the cut 2018 and 2017, fifth in 2016. So he's either really good or not good at all. But given that he had that win, you know, a few weeks back, he's taken a couple weeks off, kind of calmed down a little bit from that victory. I kind of like coming back with him here at 40-1. I think that's a decent price. What about Sergio Garcia? You know, I mean, obviously Sergio was one of those guys playing overseas, so you do worry about that a little bit. But two top tens in his last three events, couple of top fives here in 2012 and 2015. Maybe he's not a bad guy to take a look at. And one other guy that's got maybe a little bit of a longer price here that I'm kind of taking a look at. Let me see if I can find him on the board here. Martin Laird, not a guy that you would put, you know, sort of with a lot of these players in this field, but did miss the cut last year. The 3 years prior at Riviera, 9th, 8th, and 11th. And you're getting Martin Laird at 200-1? Why the hell not?
There are certain courses that just suit guys' eyes. Martin, it's funny. I don't know what I did 5 minutes ago. You know, but it's crazy the things you can remember to me. Oh, Martin Laird, play him in Carolina. Webb Simpson, play him in Carolina. Like Martin Laird, I think he lived in Quail Hollow. Webb Simpson's, you know, they make him 8 to 10 to 1 in Carolina. and one that just pops up. L.A., automatic play. Charles Howell, 90-1. Charles Howell always plays well at the Sony Open, and Charles Howell always plays well at Riviera. Those two tournaments, that's it. That's all you got to worry about, those two tournaments. Charles Howell will be on the, you know, first or second page of the leaderboard this weekend. He just plays great here.
Yeah, sixth last year. 37th in 2018, 15th back in 2017.
Yeah, winning's a different animal.
Right.
But you're going to see Charles Howell's name.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, obviously, you know, as we know, I mean, only one guy can win this, you know, like all the other golf tournaments that are out there. But, you know, again, you start talking about maybe some top five or some top 10 props that are out there. And, you know, I know that those are largely offered in the offshore marketplace. But, you know, top fives, top tens, obviously the head-to-head matchups that we've discussed before and have had listeners kind of reach out about in the past, you know, they tend to group those guys by the futures odds. You know, you're going to have head-to-heads of Rory, Rahm, and Thomas. You know, who's the higher finisher there? DJ Woods and Schauffele, who's the higher finisher there? Well, maybe you get some of these guys in this 40-50-1 range that are, you know, plus 225, plus 250 to be the highest finisher in their groups. You know, maybe they don't win the damn thing, but at a minimum, you know, you get some good value out of those.
I mean, I would just say this. I mean, maybe the thing we try to do here, sure, we want to pick a winner. It's hard to pick a winner in a golf tournament, but like my golf season is already a free roll, and it was almost a home run. My betting strategy is always 50-1 or higher, unless I'm all in on a guy. I would take a little flyer at Tiger at an overlay price of 20, but you play the long shots on the front end. And the 3 weeks ago had Leishman at 50-1. Yay. You know, hit one. The next week had 3-4 guys. And then on Friday night played Tony Finau, who's 5 shots back at 30-1. He shoots 62 Saturday and literally spits the bit, blows a 2-shot lead with 2 holes to go, or I'm catching a 50-1 and 30-1 in back-to-back weeks. Last week was a complete swing and a miss to the point where it was the way that they had separated. It was like, yeah, just watch it. It was basically match play between Mickelson and Taylor. But I think it's a sound strategy. It's worked for me for a number of years, and that's swing for the fences with three guys. You know, whatever you know, sprinkle around 3-4 guys at balloon numbers, come back with a quality guy like a John Rahm, who's maybe 6 shots back on Friday night, and you're getting him at 20-1 instead of 9-1, and you're always betting the overlay. And it's a combination of money management. It works. The bottom line is at the end of the day, oh yeah, you've had 5 guys. Oh gee, thanks. Yeah, but those 5 guys. At the end of the day, when you hit, the average return on investment is still 25-1.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And one last guy I do want to touch on here real quickly is Brooks Koepka. Because, you know, seeing Brooks Koepka at 25-1, something like that is going to catch people way off guard. Because everybody knows what he's done in the majors and in particular in the U.S. Open. But he's only played this event once. And again, that invitational status is going to bring some of these guys either back to this tournament or to this tournament for the first time with that higher purse. That's not to say that Koepka can't win this thing, because obviously he's a world-class player that can win it anywhere. But, you know, it's not like these numbers come out of thin air. I mean, there's a reason Koepka is 20 or 25-1, because could he win this thing? Of course he could. But he missed the cut in 2017, the only time he's played it. So keep that in mind here, too.
He had an injury. Then he played over in Dubai. He's still rounding back into form. Let's just cut to the chase. This guy's world is completely different now. It's one that, hey, make the tour. Great, make the tour. Okay, now I want to win. Then Koepka now is a major machine. So all of a sudden, Koepka, instead of playing 25, 30 tournaments a year, he's whittling it down to 20, 20. And you said it's an invitation. But his whole mindset now, legacy-wise, money-wise, forget it. He's got more money than he'll ever need. His whole thing now is to peak for the majors. His whole approach is different than it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And, hey, great tournament here this weekend. And, again, now with that invitational status, going to bring a very good field out year in and year out. So you got some of our thoughts here for this tournament. You'll get some extra thoughts later on this week over on our Bang the Book YouTube page with Brian doing up a video preview for us on this one. But Brian, let's transition to a different kind of event here. NASCAR We got the two duels on Thursday night. We got the Daytona 500 coming up here on Sunday. First, before we look specifically at Daytona, which, as we know, is an animal unto itself, what are your NASCAR betting strategies that you rely on week in and week out?
Well, clearly there are horses for courses. You always look at – now, Denny Hamlin is a different animal now. It used to be for years, say at Long Pond in Pennsylvania, it was either Denny Hamlin or Kurt Busch. Those guys own the track. Kevin Harvick in Phoenix. There are guys that are horses for courses. But Daytona is a completely different animal. Daytona, Talladega, restrictor plate racing, because the big one is there. The big accident, you're nuts to play a chalk in this race. You absolutely can swing for it. Eric Jones just won the Clash, and he didn't have a hood on his car when he won it. There are only five cars going at the end of the race. The Toyotas have been really good. I mean, you could actually come back with an Eric Jones again this week, but it, like Kurt Busch, to me, if he doesn't get collected in the big wreck, Kurt Busch is one of these guys. He's real aggressive. He's great on restarts. Kurt Busch has always been great on restarts. And the odds are stacked that this race will end with a green-white checker, with a diminished field. So, you know, I mean, Kurt Busch would always be on my list. But you look at the guys that have won this thing. We were talking about Trevor Bayh. You know, you just got to be there at the end. Because in the last – first of all, it can happen on the third lap. But in the last 25 laps, the guys that are – you know, at the back of the pack or have stayed out of trouble all day, now start to make their move to get up to the front. And that aggressive nature starts to kick in. And if one guy, you know, gets bumped or even aerodynamics, if he takes the wind out from underneath them, some guy making a move when he was bump drafting, it can take 25 cars out. These are the type, you got to swing for the fence here. You got to go price on them.
Yeah, 2 years ago, Austin Dillon won this race. He was 40-1. Something worth mentioning here, and I read about this here this morning, is that last year, the 2019 Daytona 500 was the last race with the traditional restrictor plate. Now they've got a tapered spacer that they use that kind of cuts down the horsepower, cuts down the speeds a little bit. We've seen that at Talladega and also in the summer race at Daytona. So those are better frames of references for you this year than previous Daytona 500s, because now the traditional restrictor plate, as we know it, not in use anymore with that tapered spacer. So, you know, guys have had success at Talladega. You think about Joey Logano. He's been very, very good at Talladega. Ryan Blaney is one that I like here this week at plus 1760. Won stage two here last year, led the most laps in 2018, second in 2017. So he's got some track history here, but he won the playoff race at Talladega last year. So I do like that a little bit. And like you said, long shot's kind of the way to go. Tyler Reddick is one that's on my radar here. He's run very well at Daytona in the Xfinity Series, also at Talladega in the Xfinity Series. I know he's stepping up in class here a little bit, but again, like you just said, you just got to kind of survive and advance in a race like this. He's 66-1. You want to take some of those price shots here in a race like this for sure.
Well, Ricky Stenhouse is always good in restrictor plate racing. He's on the pole. He's 20-1. But I played him in the Clash, and I won't say it's a bad beat. It's a car accident, and it can happen. But he was positioned with inside 10 laps to go, was right at the front, and was in control of the race. And I played him last week. I'm going to come right back. It was Eric Amarillo. And you get an overlaid price with him. The two guys I'm absolutely playing are Eric Amarillo and Kurt Busch.
Yeah, Kurt Busch, 22-1, I think that's a really good value, too. And, you know, I mean, obviously this is a different kind of race. You know, some guys, like, I think of a guy like Kevin Harvick, for example, or, you know, a Brad Keselowski, those guys like to win, you know, the mile, mile and a half types of tracks where they can get out there, get out in the open, not have to race in a whole lot of traffic.
You nailed it. That's it in a nutshell, Adam. I mean, in the mile and a half tracks, the majority of the tracks, you know, there's five cars that are the best cars. You know, 5 out of 40 are the best cars. And then it's all about, you know, basically getting in front and clean air, and it's hard to pass. This race is the great equalizer. The guys that on a weekly basis, their car just ain't good enough to compete with the other guys. But when you're working in tandem with teammates who are pushing you and the drafting, and then the accident factor. This race is this and Talladega, they are so unique because anybody can win it, because it's not just that car against a better car. It's that car with the help of a teammate from behind pushing them.
Yeah, exactly. And some guys just like tight racing. You know, some guys don't mind short track racing. They don't mind having to jockey for position. Other guys don't really like that. You know, the restrictor plate and these tapered spacers and all that. You know, some guys just don't like these types of races. You know, it's just like golf, really. You know, I mean, some guys fit a course better than others because they play well off the tee, or they're very good on approach, or the greens are favorable, or the greens aren't favorable, and guys that are bad putters tend to struggle. In NASCAR, you get a lot of the same things where these guys just know the racing line. They have a feel for the track. They already know exactly what they want to do, or they like the details and the nuances of the race. They like rubbing fenders. They like being very close. They're very adept at shifting, or like you said, the restart factor with a guy like Kurt Busch. Some guys don't want that. Some guys just want to go pedal to the floor, be front runners, stay out in front, and they win those types of races. So, you know, the characteristics of each track really kind of lead you to the drivers that you want to go with.
What do you got for Keselowski? I'm sure it's not great.
11-1.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's double digit, his reaction when he got collected in the accident, he was smoking hot. He was flipping out. Yeah, I think he really felt he had the car that day. And Keselowski's crazy aggressive. And Keselowski, and Bush, Kyle Busch's, you know, team, and they always get him back in races. But Keselowski, they'll go with alternative strategies and things of that nature. But he's a real aggressive guy. It's not the worst price in the world. I could see throwing Keselowski in there a little bit, maybe turn it into a three pack. I think I would add Keselowski to the list of the contenders, and the price is more fair. The problem is in a restrictor. Favorites, what, 8?
Yeah, Denny Hamlin's 9.5-1. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
and some places may even be lower than that. Yeah. You know, I mean, because that's the thing. You know, they bunch up. Usually, your favorite in NASCAR races, you know, +350, +400, something like that. So the favorite here comes out 9, 9.5, 10-1. They bunch everybody else up to try and get that theoretical hold percentage. You know, it's tough because you're not getting great prices on some of these mid-range guys, but we also know anything can happen in this type of race.
And I'm just looking real quick, see if I can plot a course here to Sunday. Oh boy. What's this calling for? 74 degrees, overcast, 20% chance of rain, 9-mile-an-hour winds, because that was the other thing that was going on. It was pretty windy in that clash, and it was buffeting the cars around. I think the wind was an issue too that maybe helped cause some of those big crashes, but it'd be hard to envision it. That would be a great prop they could put up. How many cars will be on the track at the end of the race? Because in that clash there were only 5 cars running.
Yeah, and one of them, Denny Hamlin, was a lap behind. Of course, Hamlin's the guy I picked for the clash. He's one of like 6 cars still on the track, and he's a lap behind.
Hamlin caused the big thing that took everybody out. He gets back out there, but he's a lap down. But at the end of the, Hamlin decided the race because he was a lap down, had no chance to win it. So what did he do? He went right to Eric Jones' bumper, and this guy's car, I mean, you know, they wouldn't sell it at a used car lot. You had to see this thing. But Hamlin just sucked himself right under the bumper and pushed Eric Jones to the victory.
Yeah, and you can definitely get that here at the Daytona 500 for sure. Again, I mean, this thing to a degree is kind of a crapshoot. You know, you are throwing some darts around because you get that big wreck or two, but we'll obviously have plenty of NASCAR races to talk about here with Brian over the next several weeks. And a different kind of horsepower to touch on real quickly. We're starting to really get into the road to the Kentucky Derby here. We got the Risen Star this weekend at the Fairgrounds. That's 1 1/8. That's really the first leg of the championship series for the road to the Kentucky Derby. We do have the El Camino out at Golden Gate. The Southwest at Oaklawn is coming up here next Monday. Interesting to get a race of some kind of consequence on a Monday here with a $500,000 purse. But we're starting to get into those, Brian. We're going to start hearing about the names of the Kentucky Derby hopefuls over the next couple of months.
Yeah, and they've got the future pool up for future pool number two, and they got a couple of co-favorites that are at 8-1. You've got Tiz the Law, won the Holy Bull Stakes. Added to the list is Nadal, who won the San Vicente Stakes. You know, the bottom line is the Derby winner can come from anywhere. It's a different era. And an unraced two-year-old can now win. So it's a bit of a crapshoot still. And the way that it's structured, you know, it used to be money. So a horse would win the Delta jackpot at Delta Downs, win $1 million the previous summer, and get in the starting gate at the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, by that time, the horse turned into an outrider pony. Now it's all about current form and the point structure late with the bigger preps that forms the field. Like you said, the Risen Star, generally speaking, the fairgrounds races just don't produce the winner. It can, but, I mean, they can come out of Tampa Bay. But the reality of it is, I think the three tracks you really focus on, and I would even, and it, there's a flyer on occasion coming out of New York, but I would say the Derby winner is likely coming out of Santa Anita, Florida, down at Gulfstream. But the other place that has really turned into a prominent prep joint is Oaklawn. So, you know, I think as it's all said and done, these big prep races at those three tracks will produce the winner.
Well, and again, as we go forward here outside of the weekend of February 22nd, we've got important races coming up just about every week in advance of that Kentucky Derby, which I believe is May 2nd this year at Churchill Downs. So, you know, as time permits here on the show, we'll talk some more horse racing because I know Brian loves to do it. And it's something that I've taken a much greater interest in here. You know, you get some degree of sports burnout in the, you know, line of work that we're in. So a horse racing market to me is very interesting, very intriguing. And we'll touch on that here as we get into the lead up to the Kentucky Derby. But
well,
Brian,
I just say this, and it's a tough nut to crack, but I like everybody, hey, you played some team, you know, a 7.5-point favorite in a football game. And, you know, oh God, yeah, look at me. I plus 275 on the money line. I'm saying that, oh my God, I'm taking this monster shot tonight with Ottawa plus 275 against Colorado. That's the favorite in a horse race. You know, I mean, you know, you're constantly, you know, running for monster plus prices.
Yeah, most definitely. And hopefully we can find some of those here for you in those prep races for the upcoming Triple Crown. But Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people find those two shows of yours?
KSHP.com and SportsbookRadio.com. The shows are all archived there, noon to 2 Pacific time. Today we'll have Tony Miller from the Golden Nugget, Tony Neville from Treasure Island. We get great sportsbook directors the other side of the counter on Sportsbook Radio. Today the Golden Knights are playing Minnesota. We get great guests. Pat Micheletti from Minnesota is going to check in on the hockey show from 1 to 2. So we have great fun with that. And again, we invite you to check out, if you're a hockey fan, the Hockey Betting Podcast. I put it out on my Twitter account, or you can go to betchriscanada.net. I do that with Cam Stewart. And it's fun, but believe me, we've been around the block a lot watching hockey, and these angles that just—it's not like we're Einstein. It's like it's just situations and scheduling and opportunities that present themselves. But on a daily basis in the NHL, I've always maintained it's the best sport to bet.
Yeah, most definitely. It's been absolutely outstanding for us here this year, and hopefully we can keep that going for this season on our segments with Brian Blessing and at Brian Blessing on Twitter, sportsbookradio.com, kshp.com, and later this week, or maybe later today, some Bang the Book YouTube videos for us on the Daytona 500 and also the Genesis Invitational. Brian, a pleasure as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It's always an enjoyable part of my Tuesday routine, bud. Looking forward to it.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing again, sportsbookradio.com, kshp.com, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. We'll talk some more Major League Baseball stuff and also the NBA with a big card for Wednesday and the All-Star break that begins for just about everybody on Thursday. Then we'll also chat with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. You know him from VSiN. We'll talk with him about the XFL and some college basketball and golf here for this week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.